My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Warriors Weekly Podcast, Conference Finals Edition, and the one and only Damon Bruce. It's a pleasure to have him joining me as guest co-host for this pod. Damon, thanks a lot, as always. Really appreciate the time.
I just want to be a guest. Co-host comes with way too much responsibility here, JD. I'd rather you handle all that. I will just try to fill the dead space with maybe a sports thought or two. Man, it's good to be with you as always. How about that game on Friday? That's as satisfying a win as we've had in the entire run, is it not?
Yeah, just incredible, really. And that's where I wanted to start, with Friday. How about that escape job? Not only Friday, but even going back to Game 5 at Oracle Arena on Wednesday. I think the Warriors' season and maybe their entire dynasty flashed before their eyes when Kevin Durant left that game in Game 5, but yet they find a way to rise to the occasion just when I think maybe there were a few out there that were starting to think that they could only achieve that level of greatness with Kevin Durant on the floor and a part of the action in the postseason.
Has there ever been a player who can go for zero in a first half and 33 in a second? Like that, not only takes an ungodly amount of ability, JD, but the mental toughness, the my dauber never went down, I never lost confidence in myself or my ability, that, you know, we see players go through mental anguish out there on the pressure of a playoff basketball court. And for Curry to just blow it all off, for Klay Thompson to have picked the team up during his slow start, it came together so perfectly. And if you didn't have flashbacks to the first go around in 2015, you weren't watching. I mean, it was like a little bit of a time machine, the way that the ball hopped around, the way that they were just locked in on all of the little things, all of the things that they sometimes take their eye off on because it's a focus issue or an opponent is not necessarily bringing out the best in them. The Warriors sort of had a little bit of a perfect storm brewing for them to get them over that Game 6 finish line. And I think chief among that was the world, Las Vegas. I mean, a lot of people who are in the know didn't just count them out, but almost dismissed them. And I think that pissed them off. And a pissed off Warriors team is a dangerous Warriors team. And man, they were just... That was fantastic. Now, I would never want to say like, oh, all right, so Durant, you don't have to come back if that's what we're going to get. Like, you're not better without Durant. But to keep the principles we saw in place in Game 6 and then add Kevin Durant back to that, they might not lose another game the rest of the way if that can happen.
Well, and that's kind of what I wanted to get to next, is just how much of the way the last two games of the conference semifinal series against the Rockets played out, how much of that translates into the next series against a Portland Trailblazers team on this stage for the first time, and as a franchise on this stage for the first time since the year 2000. But the Blazers are a team that's kept their core of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum and a couple of other players, kept that core together with varying degrees of playoff success over the years. years. There's been times where they've been ousted and swept in the first round. There's been a couple of times where they've pulled off an upset in the first round, and the Warriors know them from their 2016 run to the NBA Finals when they played them in the second round. But the first time these two teams will meet with a chance to go to the NBA Finals on the line, the Warriors in all likelihood are going to have to play at least the first two, if not three or four, without Kevin Durant. How do you think not having him at the end of one series translates to the next series? Because I think you can win a few games on sheer emotion, but the longer you have to play without Durant, certainly it does become more problematic.
I don't think, JD, that they need to see Kevin Durant back on the court into the NBA Finals. I think they got what it takes to survive this series against Portland. And to the point where, I mean, Durant doesn't play a lick. I like the Warriors in five or maybe six. Like, that's where I kind of think they are. If I'm the Warriors, I'm using extra caution bringing him back. Obviously, they've always erred on the side of caution when it comes to bringing anyone back from injury concerns. And Durant has, you almost have to double down on that, don't you, based on where you are. I don't think we're going to see, how about this? The earliest I think we'd see Durant would be a winner-take-all game seven in this series, which I don't think we're going to get to, which means I don't think we're going to see him. And that's a luxury that very few teams in the history of basketball could ever afford. Are you incentivized to rush your best player back out on the court? Well, no, not really. I mean, that's amazing. They're really not incentivized to do that. They can survive this. And when you talk about carryover, JD, blessing in disguise that the bench finally got up and dusted itself off after a lackluster round and had a good game six. And I think maybe that confidence, not necessarily for Bogut. I don't think confidence is a part of his stew. But for McKinney, for Cook, for Yurebko, it could be for them. And for them to get out on the court in game six, I think does go a little way to help them bounce into game one assignments and responsibility. Because you know Steve is going to ask more of the bench in this round based on matchups alone than he did in the last.
Yeah, and I think to hear Steve Kerr at the end of game six in Houston after the Warriors got that victory almost chastise himself for not trusting some of those players earlier in the series, because Kerr went against the grain for him. He typically will allow players, and role players especially, an opportunity to fail even in, you know, the biggest moments of do or die games and pivotal games in the middle of a series where, you know, many believe that the Warriors could be in significant trouble. Typically Kerr will allow players to play themselves out of the rotation. This was one of the few series where, right from the jump, he seemed to completely lack confidence in three, four, five players. It was a big-time shift from what we're used to seeing from him, and the way the Warriors wound up winning that series, it was almost as if he was down on himself for not doing what he wanted to do from the beginning. You know, maybe he got talked into it. Maybe he thought they couldn't risk it against the Rockets team, that the Rockets were too good to give them, you know, potential weaknesses to exploit. But regardless, I think you're going to see Steve Kerr trust that bench more now because he wants to than just out of sheer dire necessity.
Yeah, and I wonder if he almost didn't see an avenue of criticism that he had opened by going away from his original plan, and so he'd wanted to nip it in the bud. And, you know, nobody jumps in front of traffic for his team more than Steve Kerr does. He never wants anyone to come back and say, well, what about you guys? He puts it on himself. But I do think that there is a little self-evaluation going on there, and there's a little bit more clarity than you normally get in a coach speak after a press conference. And look, we'll find out whether or not the proof is in the pudding. It doesn't take long to see whether or not your bench is 7-8 guys or you're playing 9-10-11 guys. So we'll know early in this series against Portland if he really took that to heart.
Want to get into a couple of the matchups in this series, and it is a great matchup for guard play. You have Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson, Damian Lillard, C.J. McCollum. How terrific was C.J. McCollum in the Game 7 against Denver, and how cool was it to see Oakland's own Damian Lillard take a back seat after being, you know, the guy that has carried this Blazers team through so many difficult times to victory in the regular season and in the postseason, ending the Thunder season the way he did with the audacity to drop that 40-footer on him. You fast forward to the next round, and Lillard's doing all the little things and letting the hot hand in C.J. McCollum selflessly carry the Blazers home in that one. If you like guard play, Damon, and I know you love guard play.
This is it.
Among other types of play, this is going to be just tremendous.
Look, I just had Brian Wheeler on my show. In interest of transparency, John and I are recording this on Monday night. I had Brian Wheeler on my show Monday. He's the radio voice of the Portland Trailblazers, and he was talking about Dame Lillard. And he says he's really got two things in common with Steph Curry. He's got that in-the-gym range that's undeniable, and he's got the ability to comfortably move into the back seat when he knows someone else is driving. And CJ McCollum was driving so much of that win for them in Denver that he just let it happen. You know, you got to know when to wear beige and blend a little bit. And for superstars, that can be a really, really hard hat to put on and wear comfortably. The fact that CJ can take over a game, Dame looks at it, recognizes it, encourages it, and is super cool with it. I mean, yeah, that's very Curry-like, along with his ability to basically shoot with his heels on the logo. The guard play is ridiculous. This is a well-coached guard play series. Terry Stotts does a great job. We all know about Steve Kerr. And then you got the element of, you know, La Familia Curry taking place in this, with Seth, of course, being as important member off the Blazers bench as Steph is an important member to pretty much the Warriors' starting five. I mean, he plays a very important role for them, and if they're going to have any success, he's going to have to come in cooking from distance as much as his brother does. So, he's under more duress because we all know that the Warriors have the right guys around to pick him up. I don't know if the Portland Trailblazers enjoy that, but this is going to be fun. It's going to be fast-paced, and you know what? Here's what Portland's going to want to do. They're going to want to run. And it's good because the Warriors are built to run. They're going to want to run. And if they got Milwaukee in the next round, I mean, JD, you can forget it. Running's going to be the only, you know, speed allowed. And if the NBA Finals is really going to be Warriors-Bucks, wear your track shoes. I mean, if you're going to the game, wear sneakers. That's going to be fast.
Couple of minutes here with Damon Bruce on the Warriors Weekly Podcast for 95.7 The Game. John Dickinson with you. Appreciate the time from D. Bruce, as always, here as we work our way through our rotation of regular hosts, 95.7 The Game. How do you think the Warriors will defend both Lillard and McCollum in this series? It's probably going to be a lot of Klay Thompson, and that would be maybe my only concern as far as the amount of attention Klay Thompson has to spend defensively on those two, preventing him from maybe being the offensive force as consistently as we're used to seeing him be. If there is a weakness at times, and where Kevin Durant has been the great eraser for this team, it's been the fact that Klay Thompson has been able to take a back seat, be more of a defensive presence, and then pick his spots in one or two games of a series to just go nuts, as he did in Game 6 of the Rockets series. How much concern do you have about maybe not having Durant in the fold and how that will impact Klay? Or do you think Klay is just set to catapult himself to the level that he was at the end of the Houston series throughout the course of this entire series versus Portland?
Durant's absence does concern me more defensively than it does offensively. Even though he's Mr. 35 points coming to you nice, quick, and easy, I'm not worried really about the Warriors scoring points. It's slowing guys down, and Durant is the rare big who can jump out and play a guard. So any switching there without him is going to be harder to do. You're going to eliminate Bogut. Now I'm going to turn to you, Kevon Looney. You know, we talked about you as a Harden stopper. If you're a Harden stopper at all, and maybe that's an exaggeration, but if you're a Harden stopper, you are at the very worst a McCollum slower downer, right? Like, I think you're going to ask for Looney to take some of this. I think that Draymond Green is going to have to take some of this off of Klay Thompson's plate. And let's be honest, nobody ever says, hey, Curry, you got to do this defensively. Curry's got to give an honest defensive effort without getting into foul trouble, just to keep the guy in front of him honest, and then also not put the pressure of, well, now he's got to go to the bench, and Klay, more scoring is asked for you because Curry's in foul trouble again. Durant's not playing tonight. Oh, and you got to lock down the highest scoring backcourt that isn't the one you see when you look in a mirror. You know, so yeah, the defensive assignments and how Steve goes about this. I mean, I don't know. Can the Warriors borrow a page from the Los Angeles Clippers and do some butt fronting or top locking to maybe slow down all the action at the perimeter where, you know, the Trailblazers like to get an awful lot of their sets started from? So can you ask me this at halftime of game one? I'll have a better answer, I promise.
That's a great point, Damon. And final couple here, final question actually for you. I'm going to ask you to give a prediction if you want to. Now, if you haven't done that on your show yet and you want to save it, that's fine with me. I can give you mine. But the great Anthony Slater of The Athletic set the over-under for Curry family television shots during this series at 29.5. Do you go over or under 29.5 shots of the Curry family, meaning Dell and Sonya and the lovely sister Seidel? How do you factor all that in?
Would we be counting in like a shot of Riley? Do Dell and Sonya have to be in the shot for it to count as a family shot? Like, would a one-off of Aisha or his daughters count as a family shot? Because if those don't count, I'm going to take the under on that. That's an excessive amount of camera you-know-whatting to a family. It really is. That even Dell and Sonya, and I know that they're going to be wearing, you know, like, you're wearing a Warrior jersey, I'm wearing a Trailblazers jersey, and that's how we're supporting the boys tonight. 30 shots is still a lot of shots, even for a series, which I'm going to say, if it goes 7, which it won't, maybe, but in a 5 or 6 game series, there's no way they're getting in 30 camera shots, JD. No way.
Well, and I'm looking at it under the context of 5 as the baseline for this series. If it goes 6, that would be 5 shots per game.
It's a lot.
I think that's actually a lot, but doable. You know what, Damon? Because I'm taking the Blazers in 6, I'm taking the Warriors in 6 in this series. What the hell am I talking about?
How many shots have you done?
Well, that's the beauty of this podcast, is if I can record it from home, then you don't know how many I've had. at this point, I'm actually taking the over on 29.5, and I'm taking the Warriors, excuse the misspeak, the Warriors in 6 in this series. I've come to the conclusion today, Damon, that the Warriors are not going to go fo-fo-fo-fo in terms of 4-0, but they're going to go 4-2-4-2-4-2-4-2 all the way to the title.
I'll take it. I can do that. I can live with that. I can definitely take a clockwise trip around Lake Merritt and feel good about that if that's the way it were to all go down. That's an excessive amount of currying, even for a 6-game series to be. I mean, think about it. How many times do you see a family during a no-hitter? And a no-hitter is just begging you to put mom and dad back on because there's so much time in between pitches. I don't even think I've ever seen a family member appear 30 times during a no-hitter. So that's an awful lot, man. I'm taking the under, and I feel good about it.
Damon, always appreciate the time. This time, no different. And obviously, everybody listen to Damon Bruce, 3-7 here, the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. I know you're going to be out at Oracle leading up to all of the conference finals games, and if we get to the next point, NBA finals games as well. So I appreciate you joining me for a second time on Warriors Weekly, and thanks again.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you. You hitting the road for the NBA finals? Are you rooting for a trip to Milwaukee or a trip to Toronto?
You know, I think for the basketball sake, I would rather have Milwaukee. I think for the city, probably would rather have Toronto. But I've never been to either stead. So either way, it will be something new for me. My papers and my passport are fully in order.
He's ready to go. He's ready to go. I'll tell you the one thing that my wife has always shared about Toronto, and it's something that you might want to know. Great strip clubs. It's from my wife.
From your wife.
My wife would want you to know that if you got to go to strip clubs and your choice are strip clubs in Milwaukee or strip clubs in Toronto, you go to Toronto 10 out of 10 times, buddy.
And a great woman she is.
And she's just trying to help you out, buddy.
Thanks, Damon.
You're the best. See ya.
Time now for our Q&A portion of our Warriors Weekly podcast. John Dickinson for 95.7 The Game. Let's get to the best questions. And as always, you can tweet in your questions at JD John Dickinson, at JD John Dickinson on Twitter. You can also email jdickinson at 957thegame.com. That's Jay Dickinson, D-I-C-K-I-N-S-O-N, at 957thegame.com. Let's get it started with James in Berkeley. James in Berkeley checking in. What's the most vulnerable thing about Portland? Lack of depth, maybe not enough star power, not really having a solidified third guy. Well, James, I think you hit on a couple of things that are potential weaknesses the Warriors could exploit in this series against the Blazers. Their third guy, unfortunately for them, is going to be unavailable and has been unavailable throughout the course of the postseason, and that's Yusuf Nurkic, who was having a big-time season and a breakout season with the Blazers, their starting center, who went out with just one of the more gruesome leg injuries that you'll ever see late in the regular season, and the Blazers have been able to survive without him in the first two rounds of the playoffs against both Oklahoma City, a series that they were able to win in five games, and a series against the Denver Nuggets where they were able to outlast the Nugs in seven games in winning a game seven on the road. So that does become a key question, and it's been different players that have stepped up as the third guy for them throughout the course of the first two rounds of the playoffs. You had Rodney Hood do it. Now Rodney Hood's nursing a knee injury, so his status for this series is going to be up and down as he is day-to-day coming into this one, but he was able to carry the Blazers in the four overtime game late in that one when the Blazers won that game three up in Portland against the Denver Nuggets, which was a critical win, as they all are anytime a series goes seven games. So Enes Kanter has been able to pick up some of the slack for them as well. Evan Turner had a big game seven for the Blazers. They're a little bit of a deeper team, I think, at least coming into this thing than they have been in years past. Seth Curry plays a big role. I mean, we're all talking about Curry versus Curry as this series gets set to tip off. But Zach Collins, a young big man off the bench, has been extremely active. I mentioned the fact that Evan Turner had a big game. He will come in, and the Warriors are going to have to be able to defend their lineup that features Evan Turner, features Rodney Hood, features Collins. They've got some capable bench players, but to me, the biggest area where the Warriors have been able to attack their players in the past had been Kanter. Kanter has been almost unplayable against the Warriors because they get him in the pick and roll, they force him to guard smaller players, they force him to guard Stephen Curry, and Curry's just had a field day going against him. Kanter hasn't been mitigated to the point where they've had to pull him off the floor, so he's been able to do the things that he does well, rebound, score around the basket, help keep Portland in a little bit of an offensive flow. Also really interesting as you look at it from the Blazers' point of view, Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless both benched by Terry Stotts in Game 7. Now Harkless wound up playing some big minutes down the stretch, but Aminu almost has to play against the Warriors because he's one of the few players on their roster that can guard Kevin Durant when he's healthy. So as far as vulnerabilities the Warriors can exploit, I think it's, can they make Kanter unplayable again? Can they take advantage of the fact that Nurkic isn't around? And with Rodney Hood, one of the better wing players on the Blazers roster, either banged up or unavailable altogether on the onset of this series, I think depth could actually be more of a factor in this one than maybe it would have been otherwise if the Blazers were closer to full strength. But there's no doubt Portland believes that they've got at least as much of a capable set of players off the bench compared to what the Warriors are rolling out there. But then you've got Steve Kerr, who's a newfound trust in his bench coming off of Game 6 against the Rockets, where he had positive contributions from Livingston and McKinney and Jordan Bell and Quinn Cook. All right, let's keep it moving. Question number two, Q&A portion of the Warriors Weekly Podcast. Freddie in San Mateo. Freddie in San Mateo. This sure feels like a 4-0 or a 4-1 series in the Dubs' favor. However, with the KD and Boogie injuries, does Portland have a chance to steal one on the road early, setting up a chance to swing the series in their favor back at home? I would say swing the series in their favor back at home. That is something that would stun me. I think this is headed toward a 2-1 Warriors lead after three games, any way you slice it. Now, at that point, it could mean the Warriors take game four, come back home for game five, and wrap it up. But I'm more reluctant at this point to believe that the Warriors are just going to cakewalk anybody in the playoffs, especially with the way this Blazers team has played, especially with the Warriors having to play the beginning of the series. And let's be honest, the Warriors may have to play half this series or more without Kevin Durant. He's going to be reevaluated on the day of Game 2, which to me all but rules him out. And I said that when I was on with Jolo and Dibs. That all but rules him out for Game 2. It wound up being reported later in the day that he's all but out for Game 2, which is an obvious point there. And then if you need a couple of days after you're cleared to resume basketball activities, then that takes you already to game three and potentially game four on a Saturday and a Monday. So I think the initial target is maybe game three, more likely game four. In all reality, it might be another week or so, and that would be game five and close to a 2-week respite for Kevin Durant. So that does open the door for the Blazers to maybe get one inside of Oracle. Now, I got to be honest, I would be concerned about a little bit of a letdown for the Warriors coming off the emotional finish to the Rockets series. And not that they're going to take Portland lightly, but I think the Warriors had their season and their dynasty flash before their eyes in the game five at Oracle Arena against the Rockets. So, and they survived it, and they went to Houston, and they survived game six, and Curry went off at the end after Klay Thompson went off at the beginning. And I think, you know, just being able to oust the Rockets again and the emotional manner by which they celebrated that, being only halfway through the postseason, I think there is a little bit of a setup here for a letdown in the first couple of games of this series. And that means an opportunity for the Blazers, fresh off of their win in Denver and two straight victories themselves in game six and game seven, to take that series. I think there's an opportunity for Portland early to maybe steal one. And at that point, you could be looking at a 2-2 series coming back to Oracle in game five with Kevin Durant right back into the mix. I like the Warriors in six in this series, and I came to the realization, mentioned it with Damon earlier on the pod, I just don't think any of these series is going to be a cakewalk for Golden State. I now look at the final series, potentially Milwaukee or Toronto, if the Warriors get there, and they're not going to have home court advantage, and that to me sets up another level of maybe won't be able to end things as quickly as people think. And that almost builds in two wins, or at least two significant winning opportunities for the team with home court advantage. Let's say you split the first two and the Warriors get one. You come back to Oracle, it's 1-1. The Warriors win two, make it 3-1. And then you go back to Toronto or Milwaukee and you're trying to win the NBA championship, but that team's going to try and survive on their home floor. And I think in the back of the Warriors' minds, they may want at that point to come home and try and win it in what would be the final game ever at Oracle Arena. So I think there's a little bit of a potential letdown there. I'm rolling 4-2, 4-2, 4-2. 4-2 for the Warriors. If Durant was fully healthy at the beginning of the series, I would say 4-1 Golden State, but I think the lack of Durant is going to mean an extra game that the Dubs are going to have to play in this one. Jane in North Beach with question number 3, our Warriors weekly podcast Q&A portion here for 95.7 The Game. If you're Golden State, what's the defensive game plan? Is it as simple as to try and take away Dame and CJ, force their other guys to beat you? Or are you concerned guys like Rodney Hood, Zach Collins, Seth Curry might get going? Talked about Hood. Hood and Curry are the two most apt to get going, but Hood a little bit banged up at the beginning of this series. Seth Curry, I'm sure, will have a game where he scores. But to me, it's all about not letting Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum go for 70, you know, and if you can hold them to 60 combined, I think that's, you know, the winning formula. But it's really, with Nurkic out, in my mind, all about the Warriors preventing a third scorer, preventing a 20-point scorer that joins those two, whether it's an Al-Farouq Aminu who can get hot, whether it's Harkless who can be active and knock down some shots from the outside and get into the paint a little bit himself, whether it's a couple of the bench guys combining for another 30. To me, it's about not letting Lillard and McCollum go for 35, 40 apiece in games in this series, and then minimizing the third scorer and really using the Blazers' injury aspect of this series against them, not having their third best player in Yusuf Nurkic. They've been able to overcome it against a flawed Oklahoma City team. They've been able to overcome it against an inexperienced Denver Nuggets team. But to me, against the Warriors, even without Kevin Durant, not having that third score is where the Warriors really can expose them in what should be an extremely offensive series, where I still think the Golden State has more firepower. Dave in San Francisco with our fourth question here, Q&A, Warriors Weekly. 95-7 the game. How important is it to get Klay going early? Something the Warriors did in Game 5 and 6 against Houston. I think Klay is a key in this series because he's going to have to defend both Lillard and McCollum at different points. And we talked about this with Damon, too, a little bit. My concern would be, without Kevin Durant as the fail-safe and the backup plan offensively, my concern would be in this thing that Klay Thompson expends so much energy defensively that he can't be the offensive force as consistently as maybe the Warriors need him to be without Kevin Durant. So, look, Klay Thompson historically plays very well against the Blazers. He loves playing up at the Moda Center in Portland, a place where he grew up as a youngster. So I think Klay Thompson is going to be fine, but there is more of an onus on him needing to get going when you don't have Kevin Durant and needing to be a little bit more consistent. You can't withstand 3, 4, 5 poor shooting games to maybe 1 or 2 in a 6-7 game series like you can if Durant is coming back. So I think Klay Thompson's going to have to play well offensively and defensively, really in 2 of the first 4 games, if the Warriors are going to be in the position that they want to be in. And yeah, I think they're going to have to allow him and Stephen Curry to just have the green light. I mean, Klay was coming out hunting shots at the beginning of Game 6 in Houston. Curry came out hunting shots, and even though he wasn't scoring and he got in foul trouble and he wasn't on the floor, both of those guys are going to have to be ultra aggressive. And I do think Klay Thompson is more important with Kevin Durant out on the offensive end. Final question, Warriors Weekly Podcast for 95.7 The Game Q&A edition. Mitch in East Oakland looking ahead. Milwaukee and Toronto, both home court advantage over the Warriors. Does that worry you? Play a major factor for the Dubs in the finals? I mentioned this a little bit going back to an earlier question from Freddie about the layout of this series and my belief that the Warriors are going to go on to win the championship, but they're going to win 4-2, 4-2, 4-2, 4-2, and close everything out that way. I do think it extends the series, or at least presents an opportunity to extend a final series if the Warriors get there. Just that nature of it's so hard to win the first two on the road. I think everybody would expect the Warriors to win one on the road of the first two, whether it's in Milwaukee or Toronto. And historically, the Warriors have played great in Toronto. They won in Milwaukee back in December after the Bucks had blown the Warriors out at Oracle Arena a month prior to that. But I love the Warriors in Game 1 of the NBA Finals on the road against either team. I think that's the game that the Warriors go and they get. And then I think at that point, there's a lot of pressure on a Bucks team or a Raptors team that hasn't been there. There's a lot of pressure on them to respond and even the series. Otherwise, you might be looking at a team staring at coming back to Oracle down 0-2. So I think it goes both ways. I love the Warriors because of their championship experience and pedigree in a Game 1 on the road. And then is there maybe that little bit of let up, that desperation for the home team playing for their lives essentially in a Game 2 before the series shifts to Oakland for Game 3 and Game 4. So I think that's a game where you look at the home team having a great chance to win. And then, you know, if the Warriors come back and take care of business on their home floor. They'd be set up to have a game six in their back pocket to try and close out the championship. The thing you want to avoid more than anything in that 2-2-1-1-1 format when you're the team that's the underdog team, if you will, or the team without home court advantage, which you want to avoid at all costs, is really a scenario where you're down 3-1 after four. And that's a scenario that I just don't see the Warriors putting themselves in the position of being, where you have to win two games in a row on the road and three games consecutively overall, game five on the road, game seven on the road, game six in between at home. As long as you're 2-2, I think you'd have to love the Warriors' chances to go in and win a game five with their experience, to go in and win, you know, win game six back at Oracle if they have to, either to save their season or to win the championship. And then I think much the way you would favor the Warriors in a game one on the road because of their experience, I think you would also favor them in a game seven on the road based on their experience. But a lot can happen over the course of that series that can factor in and change matters there as well. All right. That's going to do it. Appreciate all the questions. Big time thanks to Freddie and James and Jane and Dave and Mitch for checking in. Warriors Weekly Podcast for 95.7 The Game. Appreciate Damon Bruce for joining me. We're going to try to roll these out every other day or so, at least every third day during this series. Maybe a little bit of a shorter version, but we're going to roll out post-game recaps and thoughts on things, and also a Q&A portion as well, kind of rapid fire throughout the conference finals and the NBA finals, as I'll be traveling for the duration of the playoffs here for 95.7 The Game. All right, appreciate everyone listening, and we'll talk to you again after game one.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.